KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
We are so grateful you are joining us on ABQ Connect. This is Jim Williams with you. I'm with my friend Shelley Rep. She is the director of the New Mexico Dream Center. And kind of a tough topic today, Shelley, minor domestic sex trafficking, human trafficking. So if you have little ones around, this may not be the forum that you want them to listen to.
I would advise maybe having the kids not listen in on this one, but it's good for you as the parent because you need to know what's happening in your community. You need to know what's happening out there.
And how often, how long have I been interviewing you? 8 or 9 years?
It's been a while.
And Shelley, I still, to this day, I just can't even understand that the prevalence of human trafficking in Albuquerque is so crazy and throughout the state.
Right. It really is. One of the things we do, Jim, is we do these, we call them HT 101 trainings, Human Trafficking 101, that we do for community groups and organizations, businesses. And one of the things in the training that we show is what's called a heat map. And this heat map takes calls from the National Human Trafficking Hotline that are people calling in about trafficking situations. And it populates it on a map of the United States so that you can kind of see where calls are coming in, and it can kind of tell you the picture of what human trafficking looks like in any particular area. And so we see with us that even though we are a small population state, we've got some pretty significant trafficking still happening within our state boundaries.
Well, minor domestic sex trafficking, baffling, hurtful term in and of itself.
Right.
Minors under 18 years old, yes. People that are involved in being trafficked for sex. Now, there's other kinds of trafficking too, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But
sure.
The fact that there are children from how young to how old being trafficked?
Well, you know, honestly, it can be from any age. The youngest kiddo that we've ever worked with, we've seen a 3-year-old that was a trafficking victim, but they were not part of our program. We actively helped a family with a 7-year-old. And then then you just go all the way up. So once you get past 18, of course, you can be into your adult years. We've seen trafficking victims who are in their 50s or 60s. And so it's something that when that person is that commodity and brings in income for that person over and over and over again, you know, you can only sell a drug how many times before there's no more profit left in it. But with a human, you can sell them a lot before the profit is diminished.
And I'm just hurt so much inside thinking about someone that's not even 10 years old being trafficked for sex. I mean, this is inconceivable. This is horrible. This is the epitome of evil.
It really is. It really is. And I think it's important that people understand that this isn't necessarily like strangers, Jim. It's not like it's this random kidnapping where there's, you know, somebody walking wherever and they get kidnapped, which we know happens. That likely isn't then, you know, that kid isn't then put into trafficking. These are people that that young person knows. It could be family. It could be friends. You know, it could be the neighbor down the street. But it is a relationship that young person trusts in some way. So it's not strangers that are doing this, Jim. These are people that are connected to that kid in some way.
Shelley Rep, you can reach her and her team at nmdreamcenter.org, nonprofit organization, faith-based organization. But we should emphasize that people that you help, you're going to help anybody that needs help.
Faith is not a strings attached thing for anybody coming into New Mexico Dream Center. So we take a very much, you know, we don't want somebody's faith or their past history to be a determining factor in them receiving services in any way.
In fact, you've told me that you don't go share your faith with people until they feel safe.
Exactly. Well, when you think about it, you know, if you don't have a trust relationship with somebody, then talking to them about things are kind of meaningless. And so then it just kind of comes across as you're trying to manipulate or coerce. These are people who have been very manipulated and very coerced. So trying to pin faith with, well, Jesus will do this, when you've got somebody who has been in a manipulative situation almost their whole lives, isn't a good reflection of who Jesus is, which is why we are very much, we are here to help. And then as that relationship develops, you can see how God opens doors. But we very much believe that God will open the right door at the right time with the right person. I might not be the right person to speak truth into that young person's life.
We're just going to have an hour with Shelley, so she'll be with us till 2 o'clock. So I want to make sure you know how to reach out to nmdreamcenter.org or call 505-900-3833. You can also email info@nmdreamcenter.org. How many minors do people think out of, say, the 4,000 or 5,000 homeless we have at any one time in Albuquerque, how many of those are minors?
So it's larger than you think. There was a study done in 2012 by Bernalillo County called the PIRE study. And what they did was they tried to count the homeless youth. Who were the unaccompanied homeless youth? They were able to account for over 1,200 unaccompanied homeless youth in the 6 weeks that they worked on trying to do that. So then what they did is they kind of, you go from there and you plug it into an equation to say, well, how many are there potentially with in reality? Because again, somebody who's young and on the streets is going to act different than an adult who is chronically homeless. And so their estimate was that it was likely more than 2,000 kids during the course of a year on the streets in Albuquerque as an unaccompanied youth. And that's just a really dangerous, vulnerable population that we don't think about or don't realize is out there when we do see our homeless population.
So we're talking about minor domestic sex trafficking, but there are other kinds of human trafficking that are also prevalent. What are some of those?
So the next one that's really the big hitter that you would see if you're getting away from sex trafficking, because of course there is the minor sex trafficking, but there's also sex trafficking of adults. Like, you cannot deny that that's not happening.
Yeah.
Absolutely there.
But we might be conditioned culturally to see someone we call a prostitute.
Yes.
That may be a person that's being trafficked against their will. We never think about that.
Exactly. We don't. And especially when you're not really aware of it, you don't see the things maybe around that person that would go, oh, this is not somebody acting independently. This is somebody who's absolutely being controlled. And so even law enforcement, everybody needs education around what does that look like? Or what are some questions you can ask to kind of say, is this prostitution, which prostitution is, something that a choice that a person makes versus trafficking, where it's not a choice, it's a coercion where they are in that situation. The other thing that we see, Jim, is honestly all around New Mexico and in Albuquerque is labor trafficking.
That's slavery. That's slavery.
It is slavery. It's 100% slavery. And we see that agriculturally in New Mexico, but you do see it in urban areas as well. So some of the things that we've seen with young people is forced panhandling. So they do have to be on corners, panhandling. We have seen, you know, the kids that get dropped off in the van with the gray tote of dusty old candy bars or magazine subscriptions going door to door, trying to sell those. Those are rings that are operating. And even within like the drug trade, you can see forced criminality within that for those young people. Because if you, as the people who are operating the gang, can get the 12-year-old to do the shoplifting or the 12-year-old to deliver the drugs or the 12-year-old to do fill in the blank, it is very unlikely that they are going to be prosecuted and end up with jail time than you as the 20-something who's running the organization.
We're with Shelley Rep, she's the director of the New Mexico Dream Center. As you can tell just in the short 10 minutes she's been with us, she knows a lot about this. When you talk about forcing somebody, though, you've used terms like leash drug. There's ways that, without holding a gun to somebody's head, you can force them to do things that is slavery. Again, sex trafficking, labor trafficking, whatever it is. Give us an example of something like
that. So when you're talking about the leash, a drug, you're looking at opiates. And so right now we would say that is fentanyl, where a trafficker uses fentanyl to control their trafficking victims. They become the drug supplier for that person. And so as that person, you know, when you, there's a short life that you're feeling good when you're on fentanyl. And so when you need your next hit, you go back to your trafficker. And since they're the one providing that for you, it keeps you on a leash. You are connected to them. But Jim, let me just tell you another leash that we don't always think about with trafficking. And that's actually with children of trafficking victims. So for example, traffickers could on purpose impregnate one of their victims or all of them with their child. And then after that baby is born, they're cared for by the trafficker's family in general. But, you know, the mom will still get to see them and all of that. But in general, they're taken care of by the trafficker's family. Well, that child then becomes this coercion or this manipulation piece with the control of that trafficking victim. We had a case here in Albuquerque where we had a lady who was in jail, and we were called by APD saying, hey, we think she's a trafficking victim. And she was absolutely losing her mind because her child was being held in California, and she had to do exactly what she was told so she could get back to her child.
We're going to have this be the last question of this segment. You got to give us some hope for the remaining 45 minutes, because we've been talking about stuff that's really bleak.
It is. It's really bleak.
The New Mexico Dream Center is having a major impact in helping these victims. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so we do outreach. We operate a drop-in center specifically for homeless youth off of Central Avenue. We've got New Mexico's only human trafficking specific shelter, and we offer housing. And so we have, and along all of those, we have employees who work with case management and can provide services. So when somebody is identified and they come out of trafficking, they can get connected to the kind of services that will help bring restoration in their life.
And you've not just seen people get off the street, but you've had them make professions of faith in Jesus too, haven't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll have to talk more about that when we talk about one of our events, because we've got a really cool story.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the Breakfast of Champions coming up October 22nd at 8:30 at Hope Church, 4710 Wantabo Boulevard Northeast. This is a fundraiser, but it's also to provide information and maybe stimulate a few people to join your team and help you.
Absolutely.
We'll be back with Shelley Rep with the New Mexico Dream Center right after these messages. Shelley Rep, the director of the New Mexico Dream Center, is in studio. Shelley, you've been a friend of mine for a pretty long time.
Since the 80s, Jim.
What,
the 80s.
What happened? Okay, so I knew you as a 16-year-old.
Yes.
And not that I was this super mature person, but I'm quite a bit older than you. And you married a friend of mine. And you guys have been married a long time. What drew you into working with human trafficking victims?
You know, Jim, it wasn't something that I set about to do. I had no idea that trafficking was happening pre-2010. Had no idea. I got saved in high school, Jim. And so big shout out to youth groups. Like, they do good work, and it forever changed my life. And so I had been working at a church and was really doing community outreach for that church, and just really felt like the church should not be contained within the four walls, that they really need to do things and bring good into their community. And that's when I ran into my first human trafficking victim, and it was absolutely a God move to change my focus. And looked at education and classes and kind of started working towards this. In 2016, we launched our nonprofit.
Outstanding. You have an event coming up October 22nd, 8:30 a.m. at Hope Church, 4710 Wantabo. Pretty convenient to most people throughout Albuquerque. And what are you going to do with that Breakfast of Champions?
So this is a multi-purpose event. We hold it annually. And purpose number one is to raise awareness about human trafficking. It's open invitation for people. They do have to RSVP because we actually do serve breakfast.
So how do they do that?
So the easiest way right now would be, honestly, to go onto our website. So on our homepage, it'll have a banner with the Breakfast of Champions. You can click on that banner and it will take you to registration.
NMDreamCenter.org.
Exactly.
You're not going to be selling the list of people to anybody.
No.
This is a private, this is a nonprofit ministry.
Right.
People are near and dear to your heart, so you're going to protect them.
Right. Absolutely.
We do need to call people to action, though, because you provide all your services for free.
Right.
But as we all know,
Free isn't free.
Yeah, well, you know, your staff needs to make a living and take care of their families.
Right.
I hope we get to talk a little bit about that. I always tease you because you brought a couple, I call them tough young ladies, that go out on the streets of Albuquerque at night.
Right.
I go in dad mode and I'm like, oh my gosh, you have this young woman out on the streets of Albuquerque confronting all kinds of issues.
Yeah.
You name it. And trying to just meet and introduce your services to young people, and that's been done very effectively. So
right.
at the Breakfast of Champions, people will hear stories. I know you have
they
a
will.
Great one coming up.
Yeah,
maybe
super
tease
excited.
That, but share us maybe a story yeah. from the past that you could
so
tell us about.
With this one, the tease is that this young person who's sharing her story, it's like a full circle story, Jim. It started with outreach, which I know you're like, oh, how could anybody do that? Well, those two ladies who you were wanting to go out and follow them with a baseball bat.
Well, I would if they had an armed guard.
Right. But they met her through outreach. And then she came into the Harbor, which is our drop-in center for unhoused youth, homeless youth, because she was homeless. She screened in as a human trafficking victim. She ended up being one of our first clients in our Eliza Jane House shelter, and now she's living independently in an apartment. So it's an amazing story with lots of just, it's just beautiful. And she also, she shouts out Jesus, like some amazing things have happened, which I love. So I'm like, it's totally a full circle story. But with the Breakfast of Champion, we raise awareness. We talk a lot about what New Mexico Dream Center does.
When you say raise awareness, yeah. though, you're going to talk to parents that don't realize that whatever social media their child is on might be a recruiting tool for some bad person.
Right. It is. It's raising awareness about human trafficking mm-hmm. and just the how common it actually is in our communities with, as you pointed out, with online being the most used method.
There's only one area of Albuquerque where this is happening, right?
No, it is happening all across the city. It is not just East Central Avenue because traffickers can't approach through somebody's screen. And so mm-hmm. it's a huge issue. So we talk about what's happening with human trafficking. We talk about Dream Center. We actually do some shout outs. We've got some awards. The reason we call it the Breakfast of Champions is because we have some champions that have done incredible things in our community for New Mexico Dream Center, for children who are vulnerable, for human trafficking victims. And so we have some incredible champions this year that have done incredible work. And then we ask for donations. We ask people to give to help us continue to work throughout the next year.
I love it. I love it. I want to go one more time through the services. You've mentioned the Harbor,
yeah. yes.
Where Catherine intersects Central.
Yes.
The Harbor's like right there, a block north of Central, right?
Nope. That's actually good for you, Jim, in finding that. That is New Day. They have a youth center also that's a drop-in center that is called The Space.
Okay. Okay.
It's okay. Like, here's the deal. They provide services for youth. Ours is Zuni.
Oh, Zuni. So that's actually what I meant. Yeah. Zuni and Central. And you know why I remember that intersection? I didn't remember the street right.
It's okay.
There used to be the Terrace Drive-In Theater there.
What?
Do you ever remember that growing up? There used to be the most popular drive-in theater in Albuquerque was right at Zuni and Central.
Before, yes, I know what you're talking
about. And now it's like
a
trailer park or something.
Trailer parks, yeah. No, I remember that now. So it was. I was not allowed to go over there.
Oh.
My parents didn't allow us to go over there for that drive-in theater.
Smart parents.
Yeah, they tried.
But people don't realize that just how prevalent this is. And I wanted to interject here, or have you interject. You deal on all kinds of levels. Like, you work with the Attorney General's Office of the State of New Mexico. There are task forces working on this.
Yes.
Not just to prevent trafficking, but also to kind of get after the customers.
Right.
Because if there was no demand,
this would not be happening.
This wouldn't
Jim.
Be happening.
Yeah, it is a marketplace.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I think it's important to understand that demand plays a huge role, and we have a lot of demand here in Albuquerque and across New Mexico. When you think about demand, you go, well, how does somebody decide that they're going to buy a child? Like, I don't think you just wake up and go, I want to have sex with a 12-year-old. I just don't think that happens. But there are legal forces in the United States that really start driving people towards demand. And when I say legal forces, what I'm really talking about is pornography. Pornography is available anywhere and everywhere now. It is not something, you know, you just don't sneakily go into the dirty bookstore.
Okay, so I'm a man, so I'm just going to talk to men. I think this happens a little bit with women too, but I won't speak to them.
Sure.
If I were to say to you, this is a private thing, it's nobody else's business, I'm not hurting anyone else, That's not true, is it?
It's not true. I would say you are actually helping continue the cycle of trafficking in a lot of different ways. The ties between pornography and trafficking are huge. That person on the other side of the screen could absolutely be a trafficking victim, and you wouldn't know. It's, how would you know? They might have free will in that situation. They might not. If that person is under the age of 18, they absolutely, by federal definition of trafficking, are considered to be a trafficking victim. And so when we look at that, the more people are viewing and purchasing pornography, the bigger it gets. And so the more the cycle continues with something like that. Then as you continue to use pornography, it feeds a piece of you just like any other addiction, and it starts creating kind of the thought of, maybe I can do this. And so it really opens up the doors to commercial sex, the purchase of, in real time, commercial sex. And oftentimes we see that in conjunction with large scale events. So as somebody is taking in pornography and continuing to allow that to, you know, work on their brain, it technically legitimately changes your brain chemistry. And then when you get to the point where you're like, maybe I need to purchase sex, well, there happens to be the International Balloon Fiesta in New Mexico. I'm going to go. I'm away from my home. Maybe I'm away from accountability. And so this might be a good time to try and make my first purchase. And so that is kind of this entry, this on-ramp into commercial sex.
That is really scary. I mean, none of us would perceive the beautiful Balloon Fiesta as being an opportunity for someone that's kind of rewired their brain through pornography to consider this kind of sin. And what a harm that is to everybody involved.
Absolutely. Well, if you think about it, you know, when people come into Albuquerque for the Balloon Fiesta, they're also going to Old Town. They're also going to whatever craft fairs. And so they're eating at our restaurants.
Going up to Santa
Fe. Exactly. Yeah. Doing all of those things. And why are they doing all those things? Well, because they want to, because they're interested in it. So if your interest, though, is nefarious and your interest is commercial sex, then that is what you're going to look for. So as you come around these big events, what you'll see is just this incredible rise in internet activity around sex, and every single city who has some sort of a large event would experience the same type of thing, where there's talk about it online, there's ads online, and it increases the closer you get to that. And so traffickers bring people in, supply and demand.
I'm going to attempt to not talk about the problem anymore. Okay. There's a lot more to the problem, but I get overwhelmed by it, frankly. It's like, oh, is this so big that God can't take care of it? And I think, you know, I believe God can take care of it. You're an instrument for the way God wants to take away the sins of man. Our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ has died for us, and the people that are involved in this on all levels. He can restore people that have been victims, all of those things.
Absolutely.
So talk to us now. I want to focus the rest of the show on the Hope. So the Harbor is a drop-in center.
Yes.
If somebody's listening right now, what kind of person do you need to help you at the Harbor?
So we need a person who actually likes teenagers and young adults. And that's important, because everybody kind of has preferences. You've got some people who are like, I am really great with preschoolers and babies. You probably would not be really happy at the Harbor. So we look for people who are really interested in those youth, and then engaged, want to be engaged with that. One of the things we're working on for our young people, Jim, at the Harbor is a mentorship program. And what we're really looking for are people who work in different industries to be able to connect with our kids, to kind of help encourage them in taking those next steps. And we have our first mentorship program happening this week, I think, on the 17th, I believe. And so the goal is for these professionals to be able to share a little of what they're doing, to connect with these young people, and then kind of walk beside them. A lot of our kids don't have completed educations, meaning that they haven't even completed high school. Many of them have not completed middle school, but you got to start somewhere.
Would it be inaccurate to say, though, that they have a certain amount of moxie? They are street smart. They've survived. To be honest with you, can you even imagine, if you're listening right now, living on the street?
Exactly.
You got to have something on the go to survive.
Exactly. And so if you want to help, that means you have to have a little bit of a thick skin, because guess what? regular teenagers think they know all the things. Teenagers who have lived on the street absolutely know more than you know. And so you have to go in with humility and grace and understanding that these are pretty tough kids.
Okay, I'm a senior.
Yeah.
Could somebody as old as me identify with these people?
Oh, absolutely.
And could somebody that's in college
absolutely.
As a student
yeah.
work? I mean, so there's a spectrum. It's kind of what God puts on your heart. Before we go to the break
yeah.
for our 1:30 break. Tell us about Spoken For.
Yeah, so Spoken For encompasses our in-person services. So our case managers, when somebody is looking at connecting with that kid to help them find resources, come up with a plan for whatever your next steps are, that is Spoken For. Those are people who walk side by side with our victims, with our clients.
And give us one last example is, okay, I'm 15 years old. I've been on the street for a couple years. I don't have a Social Security number. So even if I wanted to, I can't get a job, right?
Exactly.
But your caseworker
and
helps
with that.
And that's
what our caseworker does. So then our caseworker helps you call Social Security, make an appointment and say, let's walk through this and let's get that Social Security card. Oh, wait, before you get a Social Security card, you have to have an ID. Before you get an ID, oh, you need a birth certificate. Let's work on those. And that's what that caseworker does, is helps go through that step by step.
Absolutely amazing. Shelley Rep, the director of the New Mexico Dream Center, is with us today on ABQ Connect. Their website is nmdreamcenter.org, email info@nmdreamcenter.org, and their phone number is 505-900-3833. They have an event coming up October 22nd called the Breakfast of Champions, where you can find out a whole lot more. The event does not cost you anything, but you do need to RSVP on their website, again, nmdreamcenter.org. It is a fundraiser. It's providing information. It's a lot. There's so much that Shelley has developed in helping kids through this program. So stay with us on ABQ Connect. We have another 30 minutes with Shelley. We'll be back. Hate to use this term on the air, but I am. Minor domestic sex trafficking and human trafficking in general is our topic of our show today. So if you have young ears around, probably not the show for them to be listening in the same room. I think it's an important topic, though, Shelley. Shelley Rep has been involved with the New Mexico Dream Center. What's some of that history? When did the Dream Center come about?
Yeah, so the Dream Center was founded in 2016. And so Rob Thomas was a guy who was really interested in addressing poverty in a faith-based way. And I was working at the same time, had started a nonprofit called Spoken For, which we've referred to as our kind of programming piece. Mm-hmm. And what we did was Rob and I just really brought those two together to be able to look at how these poverty drivers really lead towards human trafficking. And then we've just kind of exploded since then. So 2016 is when we started. 2017, we started our first housing program. Want me to tell you about it, Jim?
Yes.
It was one two-bedroom, one-bath apartment that we could put two human trafficking victims in, and they would share the bathroom and the kitchen and all of that, because that's what we could afford. We had an apartment for $550 a month in 2017, and that was our first entry into housing for human trafficking. And then in 2018, we got the building we now reside in as our main facility, which is the Harbor. So the drop-in center we talked about earlier off of East Central. So 2018, we started the Harbor. And then in 2019, we were able to get funding to open up and have more apartments. To date now, we have 13 different apartments so that we can put human trafficking victims and be able to safely house them within that.
When we say safely... We should point out that when you take somebody off the street that has been trafficked, they are a profit center from a trafficker, for a trafficker.
Yes.
And they're not happy with you.
Not necessarily. I wouldn't say that they're probably happy with us.
Yeah, because you're taking away a revenue source. And so you almost have to, would it be characterizing it wrongly to say you hide them? Away
no,
from the traffic
it's not. Person? So we just call that undisclosed address.
Okay.
And so that's, we can't hide them in, like shut them away where they can never be in public or anything like that. But all of our...
They have to stand on their own 2 feet through this process too. But you give them hope, you stand beside them, and it is a total free will choice. You're not like.
Right. Well, one of the things that we started was the Eliza Jane House, which is our shelter. We started that, Jim, because we did have some apartments and we were able to get these victims into these apartments. But what was happening is they were still very much involved in or had a trauma bond with their trafficker. So they still had that relationship there. And as we talked about earlier, their trafficker is often also a drug dealer for them. Mm. And so within a short amount of time, this person would then move in their trafficker or other people involved in the ring. So we were not creating safety for that victim. So what we did was we started the Eliza Jane House, where they come. It's a 24/7 operation. They come, they still are able to receive services. They have their own room. But a big part of that is addressing these presenting needs. So if they're struggling with substances, then let's address that so that you're not going to your trafficker to meet that need. You're struggling with that trauma bond. You still really feel like you've got this relationship with this trafficker. Let's address that so that you're not running back to that person over and over and over again. And so what the Eliza Jane House has done is kind of put this first important step into somebody being able to be successful and safe in housing. So they come to Eliza Jane, they go through the program, and then after that, they can then go into an independent living situation in a safe way.
I love this. At what point are people open to hearing the gospel?
You know,
when do they feel safe?
You know, everybody is individual. Sometimes it's really early on. Sometimes we might not ever get to share with them. A lot of it just depends on how God is going to move and use. We have some people who have a background of faith and have felt like God has abandoned me. How did I end up in this situation? God did not deliver me from the person who molested me, or God did not deliver me from this physical abuse. And so it can be really, really hard. Then you have other people who just get connected in a faith community and they see hope and they just really run with that. So it's a spectrum within all of that. But this is what I really think. I think that God was really original in how he brought me to faith. I did not come from a family of believers. I had no reason to seek that out. And God did specific things and brought specific people into my life so that I'd be curious about it. I ultimately had to make the decision, but he put people in there that just kind of built in curiosity. And that's what I pray for our clients, is that they will be curious, that there will be somebody on our staff or one of our volunteers or somebody that will be a person of faith, and they will be curious about why they follow Jesus, and then just see how God puts those people into their life. We're just part of their story. We're not their whole story.
I was joking around during the break. We've mentioned the Harbor. We've mentioned Spoken For, which is kind of your caseworker getting involved.
Yep.
The Eliza Jane House, where you're able to shelter people.
Yep.
Outreach is what I was joking around with, because I'm 6'7", 240, and I wouldn't go on the streets of Albuquerque and East Central, especially at 10 o'clock at night.
We'd protect you, Jim.
Without four Marines with me.
right.
I mean, it just isn't, and you have very courageous people. So I want you to talk about those people, because I think there's people listening right now that want to make a difference. They feel a calling to serve. That's one of the reasons they're listening, because they listen to all the different ministries that we interview.
Right.
And they know that somehow God's going to speak to them about a way they can contribute. Who is that person that does outreach?
Well, so we would say this is like nocturnal ministry, right? It's not happening on a Sunday morning. So it's nocturnal ministry. So when we look at this, the first thing I want to say is that we have one staff member who runs this. Everybody else who's involved in this are volunteers. So it is the majority of our volunteer program. We have more volunteers in this aspect of programming than anything else. So I say that because there's quite a few people, I think, that are probably interested. So it takes somebody who is willing to step into some dark, and we say spiritually dark, because it's not always physically dark. Sometimes it is, but dark spaces with an open mind and a willing heart. And so it is not a good kind of volunteer situation for somebody who maybe is wheelchair bound or has some mobility issues, would not be that type of a situation, but somebody who feels like that they really would are willing to meet people in desperate situations.
And they develop relationships with people over time, right? It's not like instantly they come to the harbor for help.
Right. It takes time. I would say, Jim, that, you know, within all of this, you're doing this and you're looking at this as the long game. You're not playing a short game with this. This is a long game. It takes a while to develop trust. It takes a while for them to see continuity within all of this and know that you're not, you know, you're not out there for bad purposes, that you're there to care for them. And that's when you see them then ask for, how do I come again? Or where do I find you again? And so it's that consistency within all of that. Jim, we've also never had anybody injured during outreach ever. And we've been doing this for years and years.
Yeah, and I don't mean to scare people, but to me, it's scary.
Right.
But it's also anointed by God. It's like,
right.
Boy, if you're out there, it's like God puts this hedge of protection around you.
Right, absolutely. But we're also wise, right?
Yeah.
God does protect us, but he also calls us to be wise. Mm. And so we have a very specific model that we follow around this that is safe. We've got people on the street, but they are being watched by people in cars. We've got, you know, a model that we feel is as reasonably safe as you can be. And again, we also know that God cares for his people and covers that. We've not ever had anybody injured.
Well, you've covered a lot of great information. We're only going to have another 12, 13-minute segment with you.
Okay.
And when we come back, we've talked a lot about how individuals can be involved. Individuals can give. Individuals can serve, volunteer. We're going to come back and talk about how church groups and maybe churches themselves can support the New Mexico
Love
Dream
it.
Center. We'll be back with Shelley Rupp. Stay with us. Jim Williams with you for the remaining 10, 12 minutes of ABQ Connect, and I'm with Shelley Rupp. She's been a friend of mine for a pretty long time. Shelley, I so much appreciate the New Mexico Dream Center and all that you do.
Thank you.
NMDreamCenter.org is the website. You can contact Shelley through info@NMDreamCenter, that stands for New Mexico, NMDreamCenter.org, or call the ministry at 505-900-3833. Primarily focused on minor domestic sex trafficking and trying to rescue kids and all the different things you have going on. Maybe before we go into how groups, church groups and churches themselves can help the ministry, let's talk for a minute about a parent. How can they recognize either in their own child or in other children that their kids may associate with? How do they recognize a possible trafficking situation?
Sure. So one of the things that I would say is if you're looking at something, you always want to look for patterns because anything can be a one-off, right? Like there can be a easy explanation for anything I'm about to tell you. So you want to look for patterns, these types of things happening over and over again, multiple times or multiple things. So here's a couple. One is secret relationships. So traffickers absolutely work in the secret realms. So if your kids are erasing their phone before they let you take a look at it, if you don't have access to their social media, if you're not able to do history searches on any of their devices, these are just things that could be dangerous. That doesn't mean that they're being trafficked, but it means that they're likely hiding something. So I would say that. I would also be really careful with monitoring your kids' online chats in video games or anything else. Traffickers absolutely look at friending people through these chats, and then they pivot them to a more innocuous chat. So it could be like a chat that's on a coloring book app. So maybe they became friends through Roblox. But now the trafficker's like, hey, there's less distraction if we chat here. So download this coloring book app. So make sure you're checking those apps, checking those chats. I think those things are really, really important with this kind of modern era of online recruitment. So then the second thing is, does your child or a friend of your child have an inappropriate age range relationship? So you're looking at like maybe this young person who has a boyfriend or girlfriend who is significantly older, so I would say 5+ years older, is really, really dangerous. You really want to stay in that 3-year max, if not even closer. So when there's that older relationship, especially if that person is over the age of 18, that is a really, really big red flag. If your kid starts talking about using some language maybe that is outside of the norm. So if they're talking about, well, I'm going to go with my friends, we're going to go hustle up some stuff. Like this word hustle is very much tied to sex activity. So if somebody talks or says something about hustling, paying attention to the things that your kids are saying. There was a second grader who was identified as a trafficking victim by her teacher because she used the word hustle. And the teacher was, why is a second grader using that type of word? If there are unexplained absences with your kids, so maybe they're spending the night at your friend's, and then you realize they actually didn't go to that friend's house. So looking for any of these types of things. Those are the really big hitters, Jim, when you're looking at that. This type of trafficking, when you're talking about domestic minor sex trafficking, you're really looking at a relationship-based grooming trafficking situation. And so if there are groomers at the school, groomers in this child's life, they are going to groom them to isolate you as a parent because you are dangerous to that operation. So if that kid is pushing towards isolation, that is a scary thing. But then we also know that that could be something that's normal within teens and trying to be, you know, growing up. So that's why you have to look for these patterns of things. Does that make sense?
It does. Do you go to church groups, women's groups, men's groups, churches themselves and help train people on these kind of topics?
Yeah. So we love talking to churches, to community groups, to Bible studies. We would love to talk to youth groups, but we've found that most youth groups are really resistant to having us come talk about it because then you'll have parents who still kind of maybe live in this Christian bubble and maybe they don't want their children to hear this language about sex or talking about some of these harsh realities. And I actually look at that, Jim, and I say, that is a liability in the life of a child. You know, I was a children's pastor for years and I remember living in this bubble thinking I didn't want my kids to know certain things. I wanted to protect them from the evils of the world. What I realized is that if you're not the one educating your kid on the evils of the world, then the evils of the world are going to confront your child and they will not recognize it. And so I would love to be able to say, oh, churches are booking us all the time to talk to their young people about sex trafficking. Crickets. Never happened.
Well, I'm gonna recommend that we start with women's and men's groups.
That's a good recommendation.
And let's talk now about what if 100 churches or groups within those 100 churches would help to volunteer and financially support the Dream Center? What could you do?
That would be life-changing for us. So part of our limitations are we do have to apply for grant funding through the city and through the feds because there is not enough that comes in through donations to cover what our expenses are. And so when you're doing that, that means you do have to abide by those policies and procedures. And not that they're bad, but that does make it a little bit challenging. So it would be life-changing if we had people that were able to give and we were able to fully fund without having to apply for like grants and the contracts, those types of things. The other thing is that in talking about what if churches could do stuff, Jim, just paying for our food. I feed so many teenagers. And guess what? They are always hungry. They are never not hungry. And so having things like food drives are huge for us, and specifically the kind of food that teenagers eat. Please don't bring me pesto. They're just not going to do that. But the kinds of things that teenagers eat, they absolutely need food all the time. And we eat so much breakfast cereal and macaroni and cheese and pop tops of, you know, like canned ravioli kinds of things. Meals. We feed kids at the harbor once a day. So every night we do dinner, having people offset and either bring dinner or even come and cook dinner for them there at the harbor would be amazing. But then we do 3 meals a day at Eliza Jane. So breakfast, lunch, and dinner for people, 3 meals a day. So having food, those types of things, those are all just huge, huge things that are so helpful in going a long way into supporting and taking care of our young people.
And it's all part of being the hands and feet of Christ.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the most beautiful examples of Christianity is seeing that person who, you know, we have like this one gal who picks up food from Costco. And she buys like a couple pizzas every week and she brings them to us. And she is this older retired lady. She's got some mobility issues. And so she walks a little bit slow, but she brings Costco pizzas to us every week on Tuesday so that we can feed those kids. And you know what? That right there is the widow's mite, right?
Yes.
That's the widow's mite.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier before we started today. I had a woman call some years ago, I think it's probably 4 or 5 years ago, and she lived in a retirement community.
Right.
And she asked people to donate toiletries because you provide in your outreach program, you provide gallon Ziploc bags with food and toiletries and other kind of water and socks. I know that was kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
So there's just so much that goes into outreach, but she was donating boxes. Her whole retirement community was delivering toothbrushes, toothpaste, lotion, soap. Yeah. And you were able to provide that in those bags.
Exactly. When we have to pay for those bags, so we give out about 100 a week, between 60 and 100 every single week. And on one day. So if we go out more than one day, then we're potentially doubling that. So when we have to do that, we're looking at $150 to purchase those supplies, to be able to give those bags. And that is us purchasing them in bulk because you have to buy so much to make it worth the effort. And so when they're provided for us, it's, you know, that comes to our bottom line. That gives me $150 a week that can go to something else in our ministry.
When you started all of this doing ministry things, did you ever think that bookkeeping and acquisitions and all this stuff was part of the ministry?
No, are you kidding? I was so high in the sky about stuff. We're going to save all the people. And now, let me just tell you, I spend more time working on the books and, you know, just any of those types of things because it's what you have to do to have a business continue to go and grow. And so there's a lot of...
I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but I'm thinking there's some retired people from Sandia National Laboratories that know a lot about accounting and budgeting. Those people could help you too.
Well, yes, or administration. So like any of those kinds of things, because just like any other business, like we have to have HR, you know, we have to have all of the, you know, the trappings of a regular business to care for our employees, as well as all of the exciting stuff, like, you know, caring for the victims. And so people who have those kinds of skills are really needed for us.
Yeah. What's the biggest, most gratifying thing about all the work you've done with the New Mexico Dream Center?
You know, okay, so two things. So one is when you have a client like succeed in some way, and their successes are always going to look different. So we have a very broad view of success, And then the other thing is when we hear people in the community say, oh, we've heard of you. You guys are the human trafficking people. Like, that is huge because that means our words are getting out, our deeds are getting out.
I love it. Don't forget about the Breakfast of Champions. It's upcoming October 22nd, 8:30 a.m. at Hope Church, 4710 Wantabow, Northeast. You have to pre-register at nmdreamcenter.org. Their phone number is 505-900-3833. Thanks, Shelley.
Thanks, Jim.